one of my really good friends, when she was on the apps when we first met in the beginning of last year, she was just like, I hate it. And I keep meeting the wrong guys. And it was the whole, like, whole rigmarole. And when we like worked together, when I was like, you got to change your mind shift, dude. You got to change your mind shift. Once she started doing the work, then when she went out to dating, she was like, wait a minute, I'm in control too. Like, I get to decide if I like them. And I was like, thank you. That's what we've been fucking talking about for the last year. Then she started to really enjoy it. And then she started to meet people where she was using it like exploratory to like become vulnerable with people, being like, wow, if I never see them again. And they all wanted to see her again. And now she met her boyfriend on an app and now they're together. And she's been really happy for the last couple of months. And she messaged me and she's like, so like she sent me a conversation they had and she's like, so is this like, am I doing it right? Is this communication? And I was like, that's it. And her response back was, holy shit, this is so much easier with somebody that is actually open and ready for it.
Hello and welcome to the Personal Development School podcast. I am so excited you're here. I am your co-host, Thais Gibson, along with our new special host, Mike DiZio. This is a podcast that discusses everything related to integrated attachment theory, the new attachment theory, along with the subconscious mind, relationships, communication, needs, boundaries, and so much more. Throughout this podcast, you'll see a series of episodes I upload with new information, educational tips all about how to thrive in relationships and really master your emotional state in your life, along with special guests hosted by Mike DiZio to discuss all of these amazing topics in some longer form content. Thank you so much for being here, and I really hope you enjoy this episode.
My guest today is a dynamic figure in the world of entrepreneurship and media. She is the creative mind behind the highly acclaimed podcast, Do the Work. In just 9 short months, the podcast has soared to the top 0.5% globally, accumulating over 3 million downloads and earning a remarkable 4.9-star rating on Spotify and Apple. Her influence extends into the digital realm, where she commands a massive following of 750,000 on TikTok, along with 406,000 followers on the Do the Work Instagram, and an additional 118,000 followers on her personal Instagram. She has ventured into the realm of love and relationships, leveraging her insights to become a successful dating coach. Her experiences featured her in prominent publications such as NBC California Live, The LA Times, The Drew Barrymore Show, Daily Mail, Newsweek, US Sun, Yahoo, and MSN. She is truly a versatile force, guiding individuals to success in fashion, podcasts, and the intricate world of love and relationships. Personal Development Podcast viewers and listeners, I'd like to welcome Sabrina Zohar. Hello, Sabrina. How are you doing today?
Hey, Mike. I'm doing very well. Thank you. How are you?
Very good. Thank you for being here.
Of course, I'm excited.
Good. So are we. So I was just wondering if you could spend a few moments for anyone who might not have heard of you before, just letting our audience briefly know who you are, what you do, and maybe a bit of your backstory.
Totally. So my name is Sabrina Zohar. I'm a dating coach and also Do the Work podcast and entrepreneur. I have a clothing line called Software. And in a bit of a nutshell, I moved to New York when I was 18 to be an actor. And so I always thought being somebody else was how I was going to like playing a part, and pretending to be somebody different was how I was going to be in front of people. And I did that for a few years, and frankly speaking, I fucking hated it. So I transitioned to fashion, went to school. I actually dropped out of college. I had this amazing job ready for me. I failed my PE class and I was like, you know what? Go with it, right? Started working in fashion, realized what a toxic, like the Devil Wears Prada is very real. Like what an incredibly toxic workspace that is. And in 2016, I made a decision to cut smoking, cut medication, went paleo, started working out, completely changed my life. And then a few months later, my mom went to the doctor with a headache. They found 6 brain aneurysms that corroded the top half of her vessel. So she had to go through this whole entire rigmarole of all of these. She was like a China doll, basically. And in that time is when I started to create Software. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for me, like at this point, personal development wasn't even a blip on my screen. Like I had a really traumatic childhood and I've had a lot of things that I just normalized. So I just thought I'm fucked up. There's something wrong with me. Okay. It's because I don't have my business or I don't have this. This is why I'm not happy. Mm-hmm. And I ended up like starting my company. Anxiety ran, it literally ran the business throughout. Dated, pretty much married my father, started this crazy, unhealthy, narcissistic relationship. And in 2018, made a decision like to walk away and focus on myself. And that's just when everything started to mushroom. I have been dating. I lived in New York for 12 years, LA for 2, and now San Diego. So I've dated in all the major cities. I understand what's going on. And by doing stuff with Software, I then started to do tons of panels and podcasts and organically entrepreneurship and anxiety started to feed into dating because it's all very, you know, in the same vein. Sure. Created a clientele. And then that's when I started doing the socials and the podcast. And now here we are. It's just kind of mushroomed into me sitting with you.
Yeah. Wow. That's quite the backstory. And we'll dig into that a bit more. So, you know, our school, we're always talking about personal development, growth, people's own journeys. And you touched on that in your intro. For your own self, was there like a catalyst or a rock bottom moment where you were like, enough is enough? Like, what sort of really pushed you into diving into your own healing where you're like, I need to do this like right now?
I think like any real story, there wasn't just one. There was multiple, you know, because like the healing journey, I'm still on it. So like, I'm even thinking about moments that even recent where I'm like, huh, I think the light bulb, the like, something needs to be done. Like the first time I had ever even went to therapy as an adult, not like in my earlier years of like, you know, being 18, was when my now ex, the narcissist that I ended up getting, the first time he broke up with me out of nowhere. It was the very like, I noticed the shift in his dynamic and I reached out and then he said, you know, it's not you, it's me. I'm just not ready. And that was that moment where I remember throwing my phone on the floor and calling my mom and I was like, I've got to do something. It can't be that it's always it can't just be that I haven't met a guy that's right for me. There's got to be something more here. So that was like that first pinnacle of there's got to be something. And I remember starting therapy and like, you know, not getting what I wanted to hear, not hearing somebody tell me like exactly like, hey, here's your problems, you know? And so I took a break. And then after my ex, when my ex and I broke up and that was done, that was the rock bottom that actually, like, I would say that was really the propelling moment of I can't get any lower. So let me at least try to get higher. And that's when I like dived into therapy and to ketamine treatments and like really investing into where we are now. But yeah, it's funny to think about the journey, and I'm sure you can relate. There are so many moments along the way that we realize need to be a catalyst for change. It just depends on how monumental they end up being in that time.
Yeah, exactly. That's really well said. And I like how you said, you know, with the therapist, it's somebody who's telling you what you need to hear. Because, you know, when you go to your friends and you say like, oh, my partner's doing this or my ex did this, they're going to be like, of course, like, oh, that's terrible. He's toxic. I'm so glad you're not with him. And you're not really growing or learning or seeing your blind spots. So going to therapy and getting someone who's going to be brutally honest with you and you have you take accountability for your part in the role is so helpful. So I'm glad you got to do that.
Well, like to teach you how to take accountability too, you know,
right.
Like I think we're not raised, like I was never raised how to set a boundary. I had a narcissistic father and a people pleasing mother. So like, what was I taught? Be a good girl, shame, lots of shame in the house. Like if you sleep with a guy, he's never going to respect you. And so it's like, you're just scared. Everything was coming from fear and uncertainty. Yeah. So no one had ever taught me, hey, here's how you take accountability. Here's how you apologize. Or here's how you communicate. Here's how you do this. So I think just having, because it's like, I get that all the time when I work with clients, that'll be like, my friends all say this. And I'm like, cool. What's the depth of their relationships? Let's look at who's giving you the advice to then see, do you have what they have? Like when my sister gives me advice and I love her and her husband and they have a beautiful life and family, I'm going to take it a lot more than my friend who's been single for 8 years because she's running through guys because she's so anxious she can't sit still. But yet she's telling me that this guy ain't shit.
Exactly. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So moving on to your podcast, obviously you have this really successful, amazing podcast called Do the Work. What was your inspiration for starting the podcast and what exactly does Do the Work mean?
So for me personally, starting the podcast was not something like I enjoyed doing podcasts, but in my life, I was like, who am I? That was my own limiting belief was the who's going to listen to me? Who cares about me? Like I'm nobody. And that was ingrained by like childhood of never really feeling heard and always just being I'm the youngest of my family. And like I have a very volatile, explosive family. Mm-hmm. And so it was always very like you're tossed to the side, Sabrina, shut up. Nobody wants to hear what you say. So scream louder to be heard. So when I started the podcast, it was really me working through a lot of my own stuff. And it was really just people saying, hey, we'd love to hear more. You know, you have your videos. The short form is 2 minutes. Can we dive deeper? And I said, sure. I called a friend, my friend Corey, who has a podcast. I was like, how do I do this? And he still told me to like get what to get, the mic and everything. And I just started it. And for me, what doing the work actually is like finally turning inwards and not just focusing on external, because I think for so often, everything is so much about why are they doing this to me? So you could spend a decade in therapy figuring out why everyone else is acting, but have we ever stopped to say, wait, but what's happening in my body? What's coming up for me? Well, am I feeling this? Oh, have I ever felt this before? What's the narrative that's playing? Can I challenge this thought? So to me, doing the work is actually turning it inwards for once, because I think we all think we do by doing face masks or bubble baths. But have we ever stopped to sit in our body? Have we ever stopped to think about what our narrative is? Have we ever stopped to think about, have we ever felt this before? And is this a pattern? And how am I showing up? And what's my thought process? Like, that to me is what doing the work is. And I'm super excited to be able to have like created bite-sized episodes to give new modalities and new offer opportunities to continue doing the work.
Wow, that sounds so helpful. And I love how you're doing it and it's helping you while you're doing it as well. And I get the same thing out of doing this myself. But that's quite amazing. So how long have you done the podcast for?
Officially 11 months now.
Wow.
So
Were you
yeah,
even surprised at how it like blew up so big?
I never in my, I, if you had asked me a year ago, I'd have been like, please, I'm lucky if I get 1,000 downloads an episode. Like, I just, because I have, I think like my mom always said, you know, my mom always reminds me, Sabrina, stay humble. And I'm like, mom, even if I wanted to be arrogant, I don't think I could, considering how I was raised. You know, like, I'm always the first person to bring myself down. Like, trolls ain't got shit on what I could do to myself. And I think the struggle with me wasn't that, oh, how am I going to grow it? The struggle with me was, holy shit, how am I going to receive this? Because now I'm receiving it, the good, the bad, the ugly, all of it, the spectrum is quite large. But really, the bad I can receive. I'm used to that, right? I'm used to attacking myself. But the good is tough for me, because then I had to look at myself and say, oh, so people do care about what you have to say. Okay, so your core belief no longer has validity to it. That was
Wow,
tough.
that's amazing. Such a good story. So I know you talk about attachment theory a lot, as we do here at Personal Development School. I know you've done healing work on yourself, but I was curious, what was sort of your dominant attachment style most of your life? And what were like some of the problems that would show up over and over in relationships?
So if you go to anxious attachment style in the dictionary, there I would be. I was, and it was the textbook where like, I first off didn't even know what an attachment style was until 2017, until I read Attached. The first time I'd even heard of what anxious attachment style was. And for me, how it manifests is God, I don't even know where to start. It's like I used my body to connect with people. I always had it where like I need them to choose me and I need to be chosen. And like I had my father who was in and out of the house all the time, always like super abusive verbally, sometimes physically. So it was always for me, I'm going to be left. Someone's always going to leave me. No one's ever going to like me enough. They're always, so I needed the constant reassurance. If I didn't get a text message back within a minute, I would send 30 more. I was like sitting in anything was unfathomable. I was so anxious that like it was palpable to other people, to the point where like even my sister, I remember us shopping and I remember her stopping and she's like, I can't. And I was like, what? And she's like, your anxiety. I can't fucking handle it. It's too much. That it was to the point where like even just being with me, you could feel that like I wasn't able to be. And I was so uncomfortable and I was so scared. I was always scared that I was going to be left and I was always fearful. So, like, building relationships was never even an opportunity, because if I would have one date, I'd be crying 30 minutes after the date because the guy didn't ask me out on a second date already. Like, the pinch didn't match the ouch. And I was kind of hypervigilant, super people pleasing, didn't know how to set boundaries. Like, I was the cliche of that. And I was the person that thought I was crazy. You know, I thought that there was something wrong with me. I thought none of my friends are dealing with this. No one else deals with this, until I realized, like, you're not a snowflake. There's a lot of people that are dealing with this. And that's why I think when I talk to people now and they're like, how do you know what I'm thinking? It's like, because I've been there. Like, I know exactly, I know where it is in your body. I know how you feel. I know what's going on in your mind. I know every aspect of it, which is how I'm able to say, come back to me. Like, I know where you are. So let's bring you back to where we are.
Wow. And like such a testament to you doing the work because, you know, I hear sometimes that APs, anxious preoccupied, sometimes have a hard time in business because they're just so focused on relationships. So like they wouldn't want to take a lot of time away spending on a business because they're like, well, what about my partner? Like, where is he? Like, I need to spend way more time with him. So that's amazing that you've done all these things and built all these things and not had so much anxiety about it with having a partner at the same time. Or maybe you
Well,
did.
I was going to say, in this business, software, when I started software, I started it with my ex. Like, he was part of it. I remember at meetings being like, I need to get home. Like, that urgency of like, he's home, I'm home. Like, I remember, so like, even just like smelling something upstairs and being like, he's doing something without me, and like waking up and rushing up to be part of it. So, like, that codependent hyperfixation. My business, I think the reason that it worked was because my business launched when I was in the relationship. So I was able to focus, because I had my partner and I lived together. So I was able to like kind of work on it. And then when we broke up. That's why, like, for an entire year, like, the business kind of fell flat. And same, like, the business did well during COVID because I didn't have a choice. I, like, it was auto, it just took off on its own. But then towards it, yeah, I fucked up a lot in the business because I was so preoccupied. And, like, I remember doing inventory with my mom and I had hooked up with this guy like twice. It was not anything crazy. And, like, he'd text me and I will never forget crying, like, panic attack, packing boxes and screaming. Because, like, he didn't answer back and I was freaking out and my mom and being like, Sprint, we need to get work done. So, like, boy, oh boy, has that. And it's taken a lot because not only am I working through the anxiety in my relationships, I'm working through the anxiety as a business owner because every day I'm scared it's going to be taken from me and I'm not going to make money. And that same fear comes again, just in a different way.
Right. Wow. I'm sure a lot of people are going to resonate with what you just shared there, but I'm glad to hear it's better now than it was before.
So much better.
So much good to hear. Your big brother, Joe, is also a dating coach. And that must be really helpful to have a sibling that you can kind of run ideas off of and hear the male perspective on dating. So I was just curious, like, how is it that both two people in one family became dating coaches and who sort of started the path first?
So Joe's been doing this for a while and Joe was really doing it. So he had a drug problem and he went to the program. Like, I don't know if you've seen like all those documentaries now of like those crazy wilderness programs that like these kids have gone through. That's what my brother went through. Like, he was in one of those wilderness programs. He went to a boarding school. So he's been coaching people for a while in that, like, just even how to move on from that and how to accept that then naturally manifested into dating. And I've been going to my brother personally for the last 10 plus years of being an adult. Wow. So, like, he's always been the one I would talk to. Like, I'd call him and be like, Joe, what's going on? And he'd be like, you want to fucking know? Like, you want the real answer? He'd give it to me. It might not have been something I wanted to hear, but I think it wasn't until recently where, like, when he met my current partner and he looked at me and I remember he was like, finally, you listened to me and you stopped dating the bartenders that with the tattoos. And he just like patted me on the back and I was like, I listened, you know? So like he's kind of like me where like, it wasn't really dating specifically. He was coaching people kind of in the support of leaving that journey that they were on.
Right.
And it just naturally progressed into people turning to him for relationships.
Okay. Excellent. Yeah. Sounds like a great guy. Maybe we'll have him on one day.
Yeah, he's high, talk about high energy, functioning ADHD. Like, he's got his own shit, but like, he's figured out how to work through it. And like, his story is, he's been through a lot. So I can respect and understand how that can impact people in their life.
For sure, for sure. So I want to talk about dating, sort of like the state of modern dating today. Do you think things have gotten better and easier since the inception of online dating? Or do you think online dating is not great and probably not the best way to be dating?
So I think it's one of those things that, like, for all the good, there's bad, right? You know, like, when technology was created, people were scared, people were losing jobs. It's like, but look what it created. It created newness. So I think we have to look at it that way. I look at it as, before the apps, we have this whole entire, like, multiple generations. Like, I think there was now this new study where they're like, there's less divorces than there ever has been. It's like, yeah, because maybe for the first time, people aren't just rushing into a relationship. You know, like, when our parents' generation are like pre, you know, if we think about like the 90s before, like before the thousands, when the cell phones became kind of the norm, people would meet and it'd be like, all right, this guy's nice. Sure. Okay, we'll do it. Like, I have to get married because my mom said at 23, if I'm not married by then, I'm a fucking loser and I need to get out of the house. So a lot of people was very proximity and timing. Like, hey, I'm ready. This person's here. I'll take them. Then online dating came out. And it's like, of course, did that bring out a whole slew of like, I don't have to make a quick decision, right? Look at all of these options. It's like, yeah. So there's some negatives that associated with it is it allowed the Peter Pans to continue Peter Pannering and it allowed them. It's like, but what did that also do? One, it allows us to meet people that we might not normally. I met my partner on an app. Like, who am I to judge that and say that when every serious relationship that has been of depth in my life, I've met through an app.
Yeah.
And like, we met, these are not people I can tell you right now, I would never cross paths with my partner. We have tons of commonalities, but we're not in the same places in order to have done that. So I think the dating apps allow that. And I think what it comes down to, it's, we can't blame, think about it. The dating apps are socially inept, built by the socially inept. It's like, who built it? People that were scared of rejection and, oh, let me just hide behind my phone. So of course there is a lot of that. But what I really think we need to focus on is being a better buyer. We can't blame the technology and say, well, the computers are the problem. It's like, no, it's the people using the computers that are the problem.
Yeah.
So it's not that the apps are the issue. The apps are there because you could be on it, I could be on it, and 1,000 people in this room. Why is it that because it's a dating app, automatically you have to be on there because you want a relationship? And that you have to, not only do you have to want a relationship, you have to want one with me. And if you don't want one with me, what's wrong with you? You're lying.
Mm.
It's like, well, can't we have some space to understand that dating apps are created for people of all different levels? There could be somebody that just got out of a relationship saying, I'm dipping my toe back in. Somebody that's super ready. Somebody that's not, that just wants casual. We can't blame the technology. We have to be the people that are being more discerning with the people that we're willing to give our time to. Because just because you met them on an app versus meeting them down the street at a coffee shop doesn't mean that they're better because you met them in person versus on the app, they're fucking around. That guy could go to 1,000 coffee shops and meet 1,000 women just like he could swipe all day. They're not mutually exclusive.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that's a great perspective. That makes a lot of sense. And also, I guess it's perception too. And like, if you're, I heard somebody say once, they asked somebody, oh, what's it like living in so-and-so city? They asked one person and the person said like, oh, it's terrible. The people aren't nice. The people are terrible. But then they asked another person and said, the people are great. They're so nice. They're so friendly. So it all depends on you and sort of how you feel inside about yourself. And you're going to attract what you're, how you're speaking to yourself, your beliefs about yourself, et cetera, et cetera. So I agree 100%. That it doesn't have to be terrible on
No,
the
it's
apps.
Like one of my really good friends, when she was on the apps when we first met in the beginning of last year, she was just like, I hate it and I keep meeting the wrong guys. And it was the whole rigmarole. And when we worked together, when I was like, you got to change your mind shift, dude. You got to change your mind shift. Once she started doing the work, then when she went out to dating, she was like, wait a minute, I'm in control too. Like, I get to decide if I like them. And I was like, thank you. That's what we've been fucking talking about for the last year. Then she started to really enjoy it. And then she started to meet people where she was using it like exploratory to like become vulnerable with people, being like, wow, if I never see them again. And they all wanted to see her again. And she started to realize, she was like, wait a minute. And now she met her boyfriend on an app and now they're together. And she's been really happy for the last couple of months. And she messaged me and she's like, so like, she sent me a conversation they had. And she's like, so is this like, am I doing it right? Is this communication? And I was like, that's it. And her response back was, holy shit, this is so much easier with somebody that is actually open and ready for it. And I was like, see what I mean? We can't blame the apps, because she's had amazing experiences. The last like 5 guys she's dated, awesome. Like, she's been such an adult, texting them, hey, I think you're great. I'm just not feeling the connection. And they write her back this really lovely response. Thank you so much for being an adult. Really appreciate that. This means a lot. Good luck. All the best. Versus her experiences in the beginning of the year, because she was coming in this victim mode of, every guy's such an asshole to me and they all are using me. So she kept getting that back. And it's like, when you're going to gamify dating and you're going to put that mindset out there, you can't be shocked with what you're going to get back. Because what you put out, like you said, it's like a boomerang. What you put out is going to come right back.
Yeah. Wow. I love that. And I love how, yeah, it's such internal shift. Like, once you do that internal work and make the internal shifts, then things really happen.
That's when I met my partner.
Yeah. That's awesome. So I want to talk about, in one of your podcasts, you have an episode called How to Be a Healthier Dater and Date with More Intentionality. So you go over how to be comfortable alone, not attaching to the outcome, ghosting, questions to ask on dates. Obviously, people should check the episode out to listen to all of it. But can you just give us one or two tips on how someone can be a healthier dater?
Totally. I mean, I think what comes first to mind is like, attaching to the outcome and expectations are going to be two things that are going to be your detriment. Expectation, by definition, what does the actual fucking word mean? Expectation is a belief that something will happen in a specific time frame. So if we now put that, so then you're going to be disappointed because you have a belief it's going to happen in a specific time. And when it doesn't happen how you want it, there we go. And same with attaching to the outcome. If you're going to go on every date, it has to work. And this is that scarcity mindset of like, it has to be. And what if it doesn't work? And then I'm going to be alone and I have to keep doing this. It's like, there we go again. That attaching to the outcome is where we're going to be constantly disappointed. When you, a first date is just to see if you want to have a second date. It's not to assess if this is your person, this is your ride or die. You know when you know, and I didn't feel the sparks. It's like, instead of living like an Instagram slide, let's live a real fucking life. Like, let's come back to reality to understand most people that go on a first date that actually have a long-term, sustainable, beautiful marriage or relationship, I've talked to a bunch of them. Most of them will say, I didn't necessarily feel anything on the first date. Like, it wasn't fireworks.
Yeah.
Usually the times when it's been like astronomical and, oh my God, this must be fake. Pinch me. I can't believe this is real. It's not. It's not. It's because it's so good. It's such an act that it's not sustainable. So I think if you really want to be an intentional dater, ask yourself, what is it that I want? I'm so shocked when I work with my clients and I ask them, what is it that you want in a relationship? I can literally see the like, the shot, you can see the wheels turning, and I get, and then they look and they're like, I've never stopped to ask myself that. Something so simple. So I think even that, like, you want to move with intention, you need to show up how you want your partner to show up for you. You can't be showing up saying, I'm going to keep my guard up and I'm not letting you in and I'm not sleeping with you for 10 dates. But then you expect this person to be vulnerable and open and concise and consistent and reciprocal when you're not showing up as that.
Yeah, that's not fair.
Like, and so, who's going to stick around for that? Like, if I met a guy and he was super guarded, I'd be like, yeah, go fucking work on your shit and come back. Like, I don't have the time for this. I'm not your fucking therapist.
When you ask people what do they want? And that question of like, whoa, like I get to choose, but like, are you asking like, I want someone who's honest? Are these like traits, personality traits? Or is it like, I want somebody who works this type of job physically? I'm looking for somebody tall or short. Like, are you literally going through the whole package, or is it just more so like traits or personality traits of what do you want?
So for me, when I'm asking, I just want to see if they have an answer in general. Like, I just am curious to see, do you even know? Then I'll start to say like, okay, give me your top five. Like, what comes to mind first? And then if it's usually all focused around the physical, I'm like, cool. So you're being shallow. Like, so you have no depth. Then I go into like, okay, let's talk about if you don't know what it is that you want. Like, I'm looking for more of like, how do you want to feel? How do you want to be treated? How do you want this person to show up for you? Not, is he 6'5" or 6 foot? Is he blonde or brunette? It's like, listen, what you think you want may not actually be what you need, because you think you want all of these things. And then like, I thought I wanted all of these things. My partner is none of what I thought I wanted, but every goddamn thing I needed.
Wow.
So, but he was everything I want: compassionate, empathetic, like selfless, thoughtful, acts of service. Like, I for years kept saying, I want a guy that's just going to cook for me. Why can't I find a guy that'll just anticipate when I need him? Not in a way of reading my mind, but if you know, I've had 6 clients today and I'm slammed. You know what would make me feel great? Opening the door and seeing food or seeing a cookie or something. And every time I'll leave, I see a note like, babe, you need to eat. Here's your sandwich. And it's like, he just knows. I know you didn't need to ask me. He's like, but I know you're really stressed and you're exhausted and you're not going to eat unless it's there. So I'm going to put it in front of you.
Oh, that's so nice.
You know, but like, was that on my list? Like, no, it's like,
no.
But I had always been very clear of like, I want someone that really thinks of me, that when I've had a long day, the bath is running when I get home, not sitting on the couch being like, hey, babe, can we talk? Oh, God, you're just like, God, this is exhausting.
Yeah. Wow, that's great. That's some great tips there.
I just wanted to pop in here and let you know we are doing a 7-day free trial to the All Access Membership Pass at PDS, which means you get access to literally everything inside of the school. And this includes the 4 live webinars I do with our students every single week. And on top of that, you get access to all of our different courses. We have over 55 different courses on relationships, communication, boundaries, emotional mastery, guilt and shame, learning your needs, so many different facets that are really important to master our lives and feel really good about our lives going forward. And last but not least, there's a daily community event. We have trained facilitators and coaches who are in there doing that work, showing up to support you on your journey every single day. Please join me on the other side. Come check it out. See if it's a fit for you. I'd love to see you there. Go ahead and sign up by clicking the link in the description box below.
So I wanted to talk about ghosting, which is a big topic probably since online dating started. I was wondering if your words you could share, like, what's considered ghosting versus not ghosting?
Great question.
Let's start with that.
So I'm big on this topic because I think what happens is what we don't realize, or maybe people don't, is like what we talked about earlier, that the words you speak and the mindset that you create is what's going to be your reality. So if you walk around saying, every guy ghosts me, oh my God, we had a date, he ghosted me, this guy keeps ghosting me, then what you're saying is like, what's wrong with me? Why does this person keep believing me? They keep abandoning me. And it's like, no. Somebody not responding to your text for 3 days is not ghosting you. What does ghosting mean? It's an abrupt ending to a conversation or a relationship in the middle of it without communication.
Right.
So first off, it's an abrupt ending. So there needs to have been something that began for it to have abruptly ended. Mm-hmm. So you have one date with a guy. You text him and he doesn't text you back. It's not, oh my God, he ghosted me. No, he doesn't owe that to you. Nobody owes you. And that's, I was talking to, I think it was Dr. Sam Tatkin. I'm not sure. I love him. Yeah. And he was like, we're in the most narcissistic era of entitlement. He was like, everyone thinks that they're owed something. All of a sudden, because we have the internet, I should be this. I should be that. I'm sorry, who the fuck are you? So like when I'm dating, if somebody doesn't respond to me, it's not, oh, this guy ghosted. He wasn't interested in pursuing things for whatever his reasons were. Doesn't mean that there's something wrong with me. This guy wasn't interested. Move on to the next. I don't need to take it personally. But what is actually ghosting? When I dated a guy for 6 or 7 weeks And we had been intimate. We had met friends and family. We had been seeing each other 3 times a week. And we had a date planned. And not only did he stood me up, I never heard from him again. That's ghosting. That is, this person just disappeared. But I think it's such a muddied water of like, after one or two dates, he does owe me this. It's like, listen, would it be nice for somebody to text you and say, listen, I think you're great. I'm not interested. Yeah. But do they owe that to us? No. And we don't need to villainize people that if you're dating 5 or 6 people, like I think people forget what it feels like to date multiple people. If I'm dating 5 or 6 people at one time because I'm putting myself out there and I don't want to just settle with one person, I want to make sure that the person I give my time to is the person that deserves my time and is showing up authentically. Well, then that means there are going to be people that aren't going to have the same attention because that's just not my priority. So if I went on one date and this guy all of a sudden is texting me a million times saying I ghosted him, it's like, no, dude, I don't know you. I don't owe you anything. And so I think we need to rein that back. And that's why I say drop expectations, stop attaching to the outcome. And a first date is just to see if you want to have a second date. If a person doesn't respond, that's okay. Move on with your fucking life. But stop going around saying how you've been ghosted and you've been ghosted. And this guy keeps ghosting me. What that tells me is that you have terrible boundaries. Then if somebody can continue to ghost you, then why are you allowing it?
That's true too. Okay. Thank you for the clarification. So in another one of your popular posts on your Instagram account, it was titled, "Run if someone you are dating or have just started seeing says any of these three things." And the three things are, one, I'm not looking for anything serious. Two, you're too good for me. I don't deserve you. And three, when someone calls all of their exes crazy. If any of those three things come out, why should somebody head for the hills?
So the first one, I'm not looking for anything serious. That person is telling you where they are. Stop trying to change people. You cannot change other people. I remember I was talking to my partner about that. And he said, I used to tell women, I'm not ready for a relationship and nothing you do is going to change that. So I would highly suggest you save your energy and stop trying. Like he was very blunt about that. And I said, do women try? He's like, they still tried. They still would say, but I don't understand. Am I not good enough? And he's like, what are you not understanding? This is not about you. Stop making this about you. Mm-hmm. And so it's like when someone tells you where they are, believe them. If you just started dating a guy, I can probably speak for most men on this. If the guy wants to hook up with you, do you really think he's going to fuck up his chances by telling you he's not ready for a relationship and knowing that you are? So that, you see what I'm saying? He's not lying to you when he says that. Right. So that's the first thing. It's like so many women will try to, let me change them. Mm-hmm. Good luck. You're just going to exhaust yourself. The second one being somebody saying, I don't deserve you. I'm too good. What they're trying to say to you is either they want the accolades. No, you're not. No, you're not too good for me. They want that validation. Mm-hmm. So they're doing like that passive kind of like protest behavior where they like, it's a bid for connection. Right. Or oftentimes what that means is I know where you're at and I'm not going to do the work in order to get there. Like I know that I need to step up to be that guy. And I'm telling you right now, I'm not going to do it. And so it's like, it's two sides of the coin. It could be two different things. And then all my exes are crazy. That's narcissism 101.
Yeah.
When I talk about my ex, what do I say? My ex was a narcissist and I was incredibly unhealthy. I was super toxic. I had low self-esteem. I take full accountability of my part in being in that relationship versus when I met that same ex, every ex of his was crazy. He didn't do anything. It's so weird. He has no idea why all of them just went insane. I've been added to that list. The three girlfriends after that have been added to that list. I see it with every narcissist that comes into they're all crazy. Well, I'll never forget my dad. He went to therapy with my mom in Florida to get a divorce. You have to go to a therapist. Oh. That's the rule. Yeah, who knew? And so I asked my mom, I said, how did you get dad to get diagnosed as a narcissist? Like, how did you get him to therapy? And she's like, oh, are you kidding me? She was like, I had to. She's like, he wanted that divorce. She said, the minute they walked in, he looked at the therapist and said, okay, finally, now somebody can tell her all the issues that she has and why she's the problem.
Yeah.
And so after they talked, the therapist pulled my mom aside and said, thank God, not only am I going to sign off on this divorce, I'm going to sign off on you being proud about this divorce. She was like, because you're with a narcissist and you need to run. Wow. And that's what I mean by narcissists don't take accountability. So if somebody's going to say, I don't know, I didn't do anything. It was all of them. They're crazy. Really? So you didn't do anything? There's nothing. Nothing. Yeah. Not even, I don't know if I'm even dating crazy women. You know what I mean? Like, oh, so you still did. There's nothing that you're accountable for.
I think there should be a dating site where you have to have the last three girlfriends or partners you've had and like a detailed dossier
like
or
a testimonial.
Like, testimonial. Yeah. Thank you. And then we'll see if it's really true, if the exes are crazy or, hey, like you kind of made them a little bit crazy with your behavior. So,
right. And we have to remember people trigger each other differently. You know, like totally. That's why I hate those, are we dating the same guy Facebook groups? I understand the intention of it. I get it. Like, you know, you're trying to help your girl out. But what it turns into, which is actually, so I had a support group for Do the Work. I had to close it because it turned into that men ain't shit and men are trash and posting photos of people without blurring their face out, screenshots of their phone number. And it's like, I'm sorry, you, first of all, this guy is setting a boundary and you're being a fucking asshole to him. But you're coming out as the victim. What a rude guy. He's such a jerk. Cool. So if I take your word for it and then I don't give him a chance, but we don't know if it's you had a bad experience because of who you are or if we had a bad experience because of how you both come together and trigger each other.
Right. That makes so much sense. And like, hey, let's talk about the last few guys that you've dated or last few relationships you've been in. Like, has it been always the exact same type of guy? So that makes a lot of sense what you're saying there. Thanks for sharing that. So another topic you cover is how to trust when you start to date. This is obviously a really big, big topic for people, especially fearful avoidants who have trust issues, childhood. A lot of times their trust was broken many times, or maybe somebody has had a bad string of relationships where they've been cheated on over and over. What's the mindset or a way to trust a little more when we're starting to date?
For me, the first thing is if you want to trust other people, you need to trust yourself. Because you can't trust other people if you don't trust yourself. If you don't trust that you can gauge people's, you know, if I'm looking and saying, no, he's a good guy. If I don't trust myself, how am I going to be able to assess other people? How am I going to be able to assess damage, risk, or what, you know what I mean? Like, is there a threat? Not. So I think the first thing is if you trust yourself that no matter what, you will be okay. No matter what happens, you're going to be fine. Look, every single person that's here right now that is a grown ass adult has been through some kind of pain. Whether it's you've never been had a terrible breakup. I'm not just saying that. You've had some kind of cat. And if you are in your adult life and you've never had a catastrophic big issue, kudos to you. I wish all of us could live that. Sure. We've all experienced turmoil. You didn't get the job you wanted. You didn't get this. You didn't get that. And we're all okay, right? We're all still here. So we have to be able, when we're entering dating, if it's every person's, that's all of your exes cheated on you, well, then that what that means is that they were able to gaslight and manipulate you. So even if, like, I had one girl write in and say, no, this is such toxic bullshit. I had a guy and I told him that the communication felt off. He gaslit me to say I was crazy and strung me along for 8 more months. I'm sorry. That sounds like a you problem. You didn't trust yourself that there was an issue. You allowed him to convince you that there wasn't. And I'm not blaming you for that, but you can't blame him for stringing you along for 8 more months when if the words and the behavior aren't matching and you trust yourself that you feel that, then you're going to make the steps and the changes to walk away from somebody that's not meeting you where you want to be met.
Exactly. Yeah. So like, unless he tied an actual string to you and had held you against your will, then, you know, there was an opportunity for you to see those things and choose to walk away. But again, not the person's fault. We're not going to say, you know, they didn't get manipulated, but, you know, again, there's always two pieces to the puzzle and we have to take accountability.
I was gonna say, you got to take accountability. I'm not blaming them to say shame on you, but it's okay. So you want to blame everyone else, but you're not going to say you're right. Actually, like, hey, yeah, when he told me that, you're right. I didn't trust myself. I did believe him and I'm angrier with myself than I am with him because who got strung along? I did. Which meant I played a part in that. It's not of shaming myself and saying, I'm such a bad person. I'm terrible. How'd you not see it? No. But if you, instead of looking, how did I not see the red flags? What parts of myself needed what they were giving me so bad? And how can I give that to myself now?
Right. Exactly. Thank you. So I want to talk about the spark. We've all had it when we met someone. You described the spark as a mix of excitement and stress. Just wanted to ask, what if you've never felt that spark with your partner? Should we be worried? Or what if you never had that spark in the beginning? Is this something to worry about? Or is this something that's not a bad thing?
I don't think it's, I've never had a spark with my partner. And it's because a spark can often indicate a mix of an excitement and nervousness, the nervous system. It can indicate just a dysregulation in the nervous system. Because anytime that I've had that spark and that crazy, oh my God, it's because they were really reminiscent of all the other guys I dated, or they were super narcissistic, really charming. On the first date, you pinch yourself because you're like, how is this real? It's like, oh, duh, that's why, because it's not. And my issue is when you're chasing a feeling, you're always going to be chasing something else. And I even realized that in my own business is like, I was chasing numbers and it was never enough because when I got that feeling, I want more and I want more and I want more because it's not about the feeling. So if you're always going for the spark, I need the spark. How is that sustainable? You're not in a relationship. You're not always going to feel that. Yeah. So then when it dips down, like I have a client of mine right now, and we're dealing with that. the guy has never really been in a relationship. So he saw they had a little bit of conflict. She even said, she's looking at this saying, we could work through this. And he's doing, I don't want to talk to you. I can't do it. And she's like, I'm not understanding. Like we're just trying to repair the conflict. That's how we build a connection, conflict resolution. And it's so, because he thinks everything should just be this high. And oh, if there's any conflict, then this is a bad sign. When you chase a feeling, you're only going to be left empty when that feeling is gone. So instead, we want to seek calm nervous system. Do I feel relaxed with this person? Do I feel safe? Like when I'm with them, am I constant? Do I have the butterflies all the time? Well, that's probably because I'm really nervous and anxious because I'm scared of losing them. So that means I'm not being authentically myself, which means I'm not showing. Aha, there we go. There we go. Why we don't want to chase the spark.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. So in business, when you said you're not chasing like the numbers, what's something we should be looking for success, like sustained success, when we're not chasing that, oh, I need to make X million dollars. What's a better way to look at it?
So the way I look at it, so my friend Masha, she's a nervous system like coach and she's incredible. And we were talking about this and she was like, instead of chasing those numbers, she's like, how do you want to live? How do you want to feel? How that's my benchmark of success of like I for give an example, I was working so hard for the last few months. My partner and I were moving into our new home together and I had a 700 square foot apartment. So like a one bedroom for myself. And now we have a 3-bedroom, 2,500 square foot home. From the beginning, I set myself a goal of I'm going to be really stoked when we have the house and we have all of this stuff done. My benchmark for success wasn't that I made this much money this month or I made this much. My benchmark for success was I achieved the goals that I set myself out to. And the reason I achieved those was because having this home now meant that the life I was going to live is more relaxed. We have a hot tub now. We've got a podcast room. So instead of focusing on the actual, okay, well, I'm going to get a 2,500 square foot home and this isn't this, I said, okay, I want the freedom to be able to work from home. I want the freedom to be able to have recovery whenever I wanted. I want the freedom to be able to go to the gym anytime. So what did that mean? That meant I had to get a home that had all of these things. Mm-hmm. So it's not that I need to make $1 million this year for me to be successful. It's I want to live a life like this. Okay, so how do I have to? So that means I have to achieve these specific goals in order to hit that. So I've now been transitioning from, it's not that I need to have a certain amount, every video needs to go viral and I need to hit this. Yeah, goals are nice, of course. We run businesses. Mm-hmm. But my benchmark for success is, am I feeling the feelings that I've been working so hard for? Am I living the life that I'm trying to create? If I'm not, well, then the numbers don't mean anything if I'm miserable and unhappy.
Wow, that makes sense. That's great. I wanted to talk about one of your podcast episodes entitled Cheating, the Mind of a Cheater and Debunking Once a Cheater, Always a Cheater. This is a very polarizing topic, but in a nutshell, why is once a cheater, always a cheater possibly an inaccurate statement?
Because what you're saying is that people can't change. That cheating is because, oh, that's a personality thing. It's like, listen, if you're bipolar, no, you're right. You're not going to change that. That is your chemical. Like if you're autistic, certain aspects that you can't change who you are. Like I can't change your chemical makeup or your DNA and things like that. Mm-hmm. But saying once a cheater, always a cheater. So what you're saying is people can't evolve. People can't grow. Because cheating, as I'm sure we all have come to learn to find out in this industry, very rarely does that actually have to do with the other person. It's not because, well, they're just not good enough for me. And so I'm just going to seek elsewhere. Usually what it comes down to is the inner work that needs to happen. And I have clients that cheated on their partners and they've worked with me and now they've never cheated again because they worked through the reasons and the issues that led them to cheat. So I think when we pigeonhole people, it's like, I find my partner says this all the time. He's like, stop making it 140 characters or less. People love just a slogan. They like to hold on to once a cheater, always a cheater. It makes them feel better. But what we don't do is, again, that works for Instagram for a quick read. But what that doesn't do is it doesn't translate into real life, because real life would mean so that every person that's cheated can't change. So then a good portion of the population's fucked then. Once an anxious, always an anxious. It's like, well, no, we can work through that. So I think it's too black and white and it doesn't allow enough gray. It's like, if he wanted to, he would. It's not about want. If I did, I must not want to be rich enough. Well, yeah, that's it. I don't want it bad enough. It's like, can we understand that people are nuanced and that there's more under the hood than just an overarching statement that just makes you feel better because then you don't have to do any more work on yourself.
Definitely. Yeah. Not fair to apply that to everyone.
Not at all.
So just on a personal note, like, I just want to know, we all have favorite things we like to share, talk about within our chosen profession. So with dating, coaching and relationships, is there an area that you like really love talking about or that you like to teach? Like what area is sort of your favorite within what you do?
So what sucks is like the algorithms on the internet make you like kind of force our hands to create like clickbait, you know? And it's like, that's not, I don't want to talk about texting all the time. I don't want to talk about if you wanted to, you would. I'm like, I don't want to deal with the trolls and all that stuff. It's like, but that's how you get your name out there. Okay, fine. What do I genuinely love to do? I love to bring people home. I love to bring people back to themselves. Do the inner child, like inner child work is one of my favorite things to do with my clients. Of like, let's talk about, like, I love nothing more than when my clients are anxious, working them through a process so that we can start to understand where's their anxiety coming from, where is it in their body, what's the narrative, and how we can work through it. Because I love seeing people open their eyes with tears and they're like, I have never felt this before. And it's like just allowing people to come back into their body, into their vessel, and into their home is literally why I do this, because it took me since 2016 to figure all this stuff out. 2017. So I'm hopeful to give it to you in a little bit more of a condensed bite-sized version to help people grow and expedite their stages and their development a little bit quicker than I did.
Wow, I love that. It's really beautiful. So we're coming towards the end of our podcast today. Thank you again for being here. Before we leave, do you want to share a tool, a strategy, or a mindset with our audience that could help them in dating, relationships, or life in general?
Yes. Between your reaction and your response, put a breath. So when I did the podcast episode with John Kim, he said, put a speed bump, put a fucking speed bump when you want. I know answering a dysregulation feels like it's the right response, but I've even learned how many times I've been about to type something or text something or send something. And I can feel my eyes are darting. That's my dysregulation. I get really overheated and my eyes dart. Okay. If I were in the wild, that would make sense. I'm searching for safety, right?
Yeah.
But when I'm texting somebody that doesn't really, I'm not in danger. So I've learned I'll type it out and then I drop my phone. I don't send anything. And then I type it out in my notes and I leave it. When I've regulated myself, if I come back and still feel that, great. And I have usually one or two people, Masha and my partner, that I go to say, hey, I need a gut check. It's okay to have that. It's okay to put some space in between a response and a reaction. Because if you consistently react and you don't know how to just put your fucking phone down, then you need to take control of yourself a lot more than you might think you do. Because it's not other people's responsibility to control your emotions. That's your goddamn job.
Oh, that's really helpful. Before we go, is there anything else you wanted to share with our audience? I know we covered a lot, but is there anything else you wanted to share?
I think the last bit I'll leave it off of is like, if you're somebody that's struggling right now and everything is, why does this keep happening to me? We need to shift your mindset to, why is this happening for me? What's happening for me? Because all of these things happening in your life are not a moot point. They're all leading you somewhere, whether you see it or not. There are so many times, like even when my dog passed away and I'm like, why? And it's like, yeah, later on, I start to realize why all of those things happened. They might not have needed to happen per se, but here we are. So if you're going through anything right now, try to turn it inwards. Try to see, okay, what's coming up for me? And just at the very least, just start asking yourself, how am I feeling? Where am I feeling it? Just start to understand yourself a little bit better. That's the best piece of advice I could give.
That's great advice. And last but not least, what are you offering these days and where can people find you?
So you can find me, my new website will be up February 1st, sabrinazohar.com, which is exciting. Do the Work Podcast, of course. Do the Work Podcast on Instagram or on Spotify, Apple, Amazon, Google. Sabrina.zohar on TikTok and Instagram if you want the short form. And I have just released, I have two more spots left. I'm doing a coaching program that's a lot more intensive. I've been doing my one-on-ones, and then there's just tons of different resources in my bio, coming out with courses and so many new things for the new year that I'm really excited about.
That's amazing. Sabrina, thank you so much for being here today. I know I really enjoyed it. I'm sure our audience is going to love it as well. I'd love to keep touch and, you know, maybe hear from how things are going a year from now. But I just want to thank you for being here today and giving us your time.
Thanks, Mike. I appreciate you having me.
For sure. And everyone listening and watching, thank you for being here today. And as always, best of luck on your healing journey.